Choose your battles at the start of the week. Armed to the course and she's armed to the teeth. So drop your halo. We can see through your test. Oh, you put on the show.
Hey, this is Pirate RC and I'm out in sunny Corona Del Mar, chatting with Cameron Rafferty. How you doing, Cameron?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. So you've had a busy week, kind of tiring week.
Very tiring.
So you're getting out on tour this summer, trying to spread the word about your music and play in front of audiences. How's that going so far?
It's going good. Just one fan at a time, getting out there and playing for people and exposing yourself, not physically, but exposing everything about you to sometimes four people and sometimes 40 and sometimes way more than 40.
Yeah, so what's the best part for you about going out and touring?
The best part is really two things. One is meeting people that are really inspired by your music that you've never met before, but they feel that they know you and you feel that you know them just because you have that connection. The other thing is realizing that when you tour this country, how similar but yet very different culturally every city is from one to another. Everyone is trying to get up in their own social circle and in their own city and trying to make money in their own city and has all their own characteristics.
Yeah.
It's really amazing experience to see that.
Is there a song that people have been responding to particularly that you've noticed on the road that, you know, maybe you didn't even expect? Or
I'd say Mausoleum. Okay. Is probably a lot of people respond to that. I don't know why, but the people that really respond to that really respond to that song.
Come inside my mausoleum. Light a candle on the pathway to my casket room. Step on through rusty iron archways.
So is that one that you can see doing something with as far as promoting as a single eventually or a video? No, it just happens to be one that's live.
It's
doing
just
really well.
It's just not a single, you know. Mm-hmm. It's a song that's it's interesting. It's deep. People respond to it well, but it's something you'd put on the radio and people would go, "What the hell is this song?" You know.
So one song that you do have out there is 1 in 10, and you even made a video for it. So how'd you guys decide to go and, or how'd you decide, I guess, to go and make a video and move in that direction with it?
Well, I was contacted by the guys that did all the Killers videos, because a lot of their network is in Vegas, Salt Lake area where I'm from.
Yeah.
And they're really excited about doing 1 in 10 and Dirty Conversation. We got together, decided it would be cool to have me sitting in a coffee shop, this amazing coffee shop in downtown Salt Lake City. It's a gem. It's called Beehive Tea Room. And Matt Gardner directed the video and Eric Russell produced it. And these guys said, wouldn't it be cool if, because when you break up with somebody, everybody reminds you of that person, a leaf, a car, you know, a song reminds you of that person. And you start seeing that person's face in people that look kind of similar.
Yeah.
So we thought, man, that'd be cool to be in a coffee shop, have a breakup scene. You know, as cheesy as it is, breakup scene. And then I'm sitting and singing the song in the coffee shop, and every girl that walks by is the same damn girl.
Yeah.
We decided to take a step further by putting the same girl in different outfits in two scenes at the same time. In some cases, three times in one scene with a fluid motion without having cut, like, cut, girl, cut.
Yeah.
In a different outfit, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, and
it was
definitely
like
a cool
all three
concept.
Girls in one scene, and we were like, oh, man. But it was so grueling. It took like 70 hours to do.
Wow.
the mechanism that was built, we kind of had a jerry-rigged mechanism that kept breaking down. So we'd have to come back the next day, and oh my God, it was such... And one day, we were on set for 28 hours,
wow.
No break. It was like brutal. We had to get it done.
Yeah.
Oh boy, it was a mess, but it turned out great. I'm very, very pleased.
1 in 10, you say if I go, I'll never leave this one down. 3 in 56, I might lose out on birthday wishes, but the odds of having you are none.
So on your website, kind of in the news or blog area, you have a question, like how many girls were in the video?
Yeah.
Have people answered that question? And
some people get it right, and some people say 3, some people say 2, but it was only one girl.
So
yeah.
If anyone's listening now, you can answer correctly, and camera will think, wow.
I was thinking about doing a sweepstakes or some kind of a contest where I give away free stuff, but I give away too much free stuff anyway. So I'm just like,
how many girls
do you think were in the video? Good, you answered correctly, and I can't give you anything.
Talk amongst yourselves.
Talk amongst yourselves.
It's coffee talk, right? That's what you can do. Just give them something to talk about.
Exactly.
So. The concept for the video, I mean, you know, that came probably from the guys producing it and everything.
Yeah.
Right? So did you, when you wrote this song, or when you write some songs, do you have, like, a story in mind sometimes? Or is it just kind of, like, a lyric comes or the music comes? How do you go about the songwriting process?
So what I'll typically do is I'll come up with a little melody in my head. I'll come up with a sentence or a couple words in my head of where I want the story to go. And then I'll kind of sing it out, mumble it in tongues, I guess you could say. And then I'll record myself and listen to it and go, oh, that's really funny. It sounded like, in this song I said, I'm infatuated with the, when I went, when I'm singing, I'm like, oh, I'm infatuated with a girl. That's what I was trying to say. Or the part was goes, and I'm like, oh, cool. I think I just said 1 in 10, you say, if I go. Or it's kind of like you mumble it, you listen to it, and then all of a sudden you find it. You come up with this story, however in the realms of processes that it may
yeah.
be, the story is there. It just has to be brushed away like... Like, you know when you're a little kid and you go to those archaeology museums
and
dig for dinosaurs?
Yep.
Well, you start there with a dinosaur underneath the sand, and then you take your brush, and then you keep brushing away at this fake dinosaur skeleton, and then all of a sudden you find out it's a T-Rex foot! You know what I mean?
Exactly.
That's kind of how it is.
Yeah. No, that's cool, though. As far as, like, the instrumentation, I mean... Like, well, in 1 in 10, you know, you hear the piano and stuff. I mean, what instruments do you play yourself?
All of them, except for, like, horn instruments, and I'm not a horn instruments guy.
Yeah.
But piano and string instruments.
That's great.
But not really, I don't play violin or any of those, like, cello, any of those things well, but I've always had a knack for string instruments and percussion and drums, but horn, no.
Did you play, like, when you were in high school or even younger, or
Yeah, played the bass, the big upright bass, orchestra bass, and guitar, and all that fun stuff.
Cool. One thing I wanted to ask you about, I was at Sundance this year, actually. I was just lucky to get to go, and as a crazy film fan, and check things out, and you were there as an artist, so what is that experience like? And, I mean, you are from Utah, so... You know, you're a local guy for them, but what's it like being an artist at Sundance?
Well, Sundance has been a huge start for my career, because when I was nominated for some of my songs as best score during the festival a few years ago, things just kind of took off from there. I don't know how they did or what they did, but I got more confidence. I quit my job as a corporate guy, and I said, screw this, I'm going to do music. They invited me back to be an official Sundance artist last year, and I played a whole bunch of shows for different private events and mm-hmm. parties and met a bunch of people. And then played with Praz from Fugees
mm-hmm.
For the Sundance Haiti fundraiser.
Yeah.
So me and Praz did Ghetto Superstar and Fuji Law and all the old Fuji songs and on stage. That was amazing because that was like a week after the earthquake
mm-hmm.
in Haiti. And there's a bunch of like, you know, famous people and stuff like that there. And it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It was a whole lot of fun. Sundance every year just keeps getting better and better for me, but I'm excited to see what's going to happen next year. So.
Oh, I'm sure. Is there anyone that you've just kind of in your head go, you know, that'd be it'd be cool to play with them, since you, now you've played a show with someone playing other music? And
oh my God, yeah. I've always wanted to play with Danger Mouse. If anybody yeah. doesn't know, it's Gnarls Barkley's.
Yep.
And Gorillaz, got the guy that does all the beats for Gnarls Barkley and Gorillaz and Broken Bells. And I think me and him would, if we got together, we'd make an awesome record. But hopefully one day that happens.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are so many just important collaborations going on now.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have kind of almost an extreme case of, like, Jack White, who's got three bands.
Exactly.
Going, like, three legitimate bands going.
And, exactly.
And then, yeah, you have some people who are producing amazing beats onto songs and just changing the whole like atmosphere of the song, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cool thing that's going on, and kind of outside of the whole record label thing too, you know.
Yeah.
Like Tom York recently said that he sees, as far as the major labels, them being gone, like eventually, and just people managing themselves. And
yeah, that's so. Essentially what I'm doing these days.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing. Like, you can't, in this industry. I know we're going off topic, but in this industry, it's creating superhuman musicians.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be business savvy. You have to manage 15 people at the same time. Even a manager.
Yeah.
All a manager is just getting connections, and managers these days don't even do their jobs anymore.
Yeah.
They manage 8 or 9 bands with the connections they have, and they see if they can do this or do that. But the only person looking out for your best interest in this world of noise in the industry is yourself, which is literally like all the musicians that I see that are independent that are really kicking ass are, they're like superhuman beings.
One thing kind of bringing us back around this sentence, you have had music in a film before, and kind of one thing that you're seeing a lot, especially like with television, is that a song will be featured in a show and then it'll jump up on iTunes for a bit. And what was the experience like for you just working, as far as working with having your song in a film or your music in a film? And do you kind of like look forward to doing something like that in the future?
Well, another thing that I've done is chase after every music supervisor in Hollywood, just constantly cold call them, and I realized I wasn't getting anywhere, so I got a couple agents that would help me out. They believed in me, these guys. We do a profit split. You do a business deal.
Mm-hmm.
Like every other musician thinks they're so great, they should have their song on a, you know, whatever.
Sure.
Just ego and just, you know.
Well, they said for the Twilight soundtrack, like 100,000 songs got submitted. I don't know if that's an exaggeration, but I would believe it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And every one of those people think, every one of those people have moms and friends and cousins that tell them that they could do it and they could be big. And
yeah.
So they're like, ooh, okay, I'm going to do it. And that's initially how I was. Until I got jaded and realized that it was smarter to do it another way.
Mm-hmm.
So, I just got done yesterday going with my guitar with my agent and meeting a lot of the people for the big TV shows and HBO shows, making the rounds in LA yesterday. And I know these people on a first name basis that play these, that do the placements. However, 1 in 10 or Mausoleum or Dirty Conversation or any of these songs of mine, that might just not fit for that TV show. But in 3 years, they might go, oh, we got this song about this woman and this guy in a past life situation, and he's in a tomb and da-da-da, and they're like,
yeah.
Mausoleum would be perfect for this. So you can know these people on a first-name basis, which is the first hardest thing, but they get submitted. There's thousands of songs that get submitted for them. If they don't know you on a personal level, it's like all who you know, you know? Finally, I got a little break with this Tyler Perry movie, the Why Did I Get Married 2, which was able to pay for one of my videos. And that was as a result of just waking up every morning and hitting it hard and trying to schedule meetings and having them cancel on you and go, 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 and then go tour, 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 and then write, and artwork, and back to LA for more meetings and waiting, a lot of waiting around and hurry up and wait, and finally something happens. So the ball is starting to really roll on that aspect.
And you have your album right now, and you're just going to focus on touring on that. Are you doing any recording on the side right now? Or?
In a month and a half, I'll be releasing the next EP,
right,
which is going to be entitled XOX. And it has a lot to deal with how a lot of people think technology has killed romance, texting and those type of things.
Mm-hmm.
And it plays around with elements of the sea and water and technology and romance, and I'm very excited about it. It's going to be cool.
That's great. What was actually the first record or album you bought for yourself?
Color Me Bad. I want to sex you up single.
On cassette, right?
On cassette. Yeah, on cassette. It was the coolest damn song. And I remember buying it, and the people in the store looking at me like a little kid. Like, I don't know if your mom really is going to appreciate this. And I rolled out of there thinking I just did the drug deal of a century.
Yeah.
I got home. I took out my pen, and I X'd out all the word sex all over the cassette, and I put that underneath the recesses of my bed so my mom would never ever find it.
The forbidden Color Me Bad album.
The forbidden Color Me Bad. I want to sex you up.
Exactly. Do you remember what the first show you went to, the first time you went and saw someone live?
When I was 14, my mom let me go to Smashing Pumpkins. Mm. They came to town. They came to Salt Lake City. Went to go see them, and we have the Delta Center, what it used to be called. And so I'm sitting up here with my little band buddies. No, I was 13 actually. I'm sitting up there with my band buddies, and we were head bashing in the nosebleed seats for literally like 2 hours straight. I think I lost like my frontal lobe still today because of that night. It was the coolest experience. And then Billy Corgan goes. He said something like, "Hey, you guys up there, you know, blah blah blah." He said, I couldn't hear what he said, but he was like pointing to us because nobody around us was doing it. But we were going nuts and just throwing stuff and had posters and crazy. And he said something, and to this day, I remember when he like acknowledged us like going so hard and losing our brains and becoming like, I mean, our heads becoming applesauce. At least Billy Corgan acknowledged us.
Yeah.
And the rest of the show, I was like, man, I'm on top of the world. And all of a sudden, I thought to myself, like, what if I could do that one day?
Yeah.
And then I lost track of my dreams and got back into it.
Yeah.
In my mid-20s.
You went to school, like. And...
Yeah. It was an amazing experience, though. Billy Corgan.
Yeah, that's cool.
One day I'll meet him and I'll tell him that story.
Do you remember the first time you played live, like played your own music live?
Yes, very vividly. It was that same year, or the year after, I was a seventh grader. We got up for the junior high talent show.
Nice.
I had long hair, and it wasn't cool to be in a band back in the day. It was cool to be a jock.
Yeah.
But this is before Tony Hawk, this is before skaters were losers back then.
Mm-hmm.
And so me and my buddies formed a band, we got up, we sang one of my songs on stage, and we sang Smashing Pumpkins today.
Nice.
Because of Billy Corgan. I really don't even listen to them anymore.
Yeah, but the things that hit you at that time, right? I mean,
it's a big deal. So we got up and we sang those two songs, and all the jocks were in the front of the row. It was like a scene from Napoleon Dynamite. So we played the song. We played the songs, and the whole time the jocks were in the front row booing, standing up, throwing crap, like, oh, you know.
Yeah.
All I remember was, oh, I just got to get through. I just got to get through Smashing Pumpkins today. I just got to get through this, and I'm going to go off stage. I'm never going to come to school again because it's so embarrassing because I'm just getting heckled for, like, we didn't even finish the song barely before I just, like, decided to call it quits on stage, and like it was a horrible experience. Like we were literally booed off the stage, and we weren't that bad, but it was just like, you know, when you in junior high, kids are so mean to each
other. Yeah, they don't get it.
They just, yeah.
What's cool then is definitely, by the end of high school, not cool anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
It was amazing. And parents don't teach their kids, like, kids teach each other in junior high just to be dicks to each other constantly. Yeah. And so, I was booed off stage, and I'll never forget that feeling. That was the first experience of playing live.
That's rough.
It was tough.
That's a tough one.
Especially when you're that young. But now, you know, it's part of life, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Well, yeah, at least you came back to it.
Yeah. These same kids have booed me off stage and now come to my shows with their wives now, so.
Yeah.
And some of their kids.
Yeah, so who's getting booed now? I'm sure at home.
Who's getting booed now, bitches? But of course, that's not why I do this anymore,
no.
Just to prove a point. But it used to be why I do this.
Yeah, motivation. Eventually, the motivation has to be something else.
Eventually, 15 years later, it has to be something else. So.
Yeah, what are you doing this for? Revenge.
Yeah, this Pretty is much. All just for revenge, for people who don't really care anymore.
Exactly. So everyone on Facebook and see what's up.
Yeah, bitches. Check out my Facebook. See how many Facebook fans I have now, bitches, compared to you and your wife. You ain't got shit.
Yeah, you don't even have fans. Anyway.
You said that so Napoleon Dynamite rock star. That was awesome. It's really funny. Just a side note. For that movie, the writer of that movie, I believe his brother or himself went to my high school.
Oh, really?
And I remember when I was in high school, my senior year, my band and I played like a Chili Peppers song for the assembly. And then this kid, he got on stage and he did this crazy dance by himself to some crazy old 80s tune or something. And people were, I wasn't on stage, I was backstage and doing my thing or whatever. People were going nuts and going crazy. This kid used to drive around this old, 50s convertible looking thing. And he had very Napoleon Dynamite-esque qualities.
Yeah, yeah.
So when that movie came out, all my friends started talking about, do you think it was, that scene was inspired by when that kid did that crazy, like, funky dance on stage and the whole audience went nuts because the writer of the actual movie, him or his brother, I think he was there though, was at that assembly and saw that.
That's crazy.
So I have this weird affinity to that movie now because
you remember almost like the real like the real version of it.
And in fact, I have a song on the next EP that is a cover, it's a rendition of The Promise by When in Rome. Sorry, but I've been thinking of the right words to say.
Yeah, you know that song? Yeah.
So we did a ukulele version of that song.
Oh, nice. Because
it's the last song of Napoleon Dynamite. So.
Yeah, and that's a great song, too.
Yeah, it's a great
song.
That's
cool.
So anyway, that's just a little side note.
Yeah, but that's awesome.
Yeah.
So I look forward to hearing that for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, Cameron. Well, let's go enjoy the rest of this sunny day. Thanks a lot for your time with the interview. And good luck with what you got coming up this summer. We're excited to hear the new songs.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed this interview immensely.
Cool. All right, we'll talk to you soon. And for those of you listening, definitely check out Cameron's website, and he's also on Facebook. So it's CameronRafferty.com.
Little